I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
I want to bring up our stellar cast of Political Breakfast, Brian Robinson, Theron Johnson, and Lisa Raham.
Hello, hello, hello. Give yourselves a round of applause. We are so honored to be here tonight to chit-chat, to talk about some of those hot topic items. I was able to talk to a lot of you and a lot of you students. Wow, you're talking about the Senate race between studies, right? You're talking about loan forgiveness between studies, right? And all sorts of things. So it's our job to talk about that stuff you talk about around the water cooler. That stuff that's important to you and that makes a difference in your life. Before we begin tonight, just want to let you know how it comes to fruition week to week. A lot of you say you listen to us, and we're so honored. Raise your hands, those of you who listen to us.
Oh,
thank
wow.
you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. We are interested in bringing you conversation that affects you, that's important to you, and like I said, that you can talk about with your neighbor. So each week, we just kind of sort through the topics. These two guys live politics, right? And they watch it hour after hour after hour, minute after minute. So we talk the morning of our taping and decide what topics you may want to hear about, what topics may affect you, and what topics may make a difference in your life. So there you have Political Breakfast. We appreciate your support and welcome to Political Breakfast Live. I'm your host, Lisa Raham, and with me this evening are our strategists, Theron Johnson and Brian Robinson. Brian for the Republican side and Theron for the Democrat side. Yeah. Welcome, both of you.
It's good to see you.
This is the first time we've been in person since we started about a year ago, right? Because of the pandemic.
Yeah, well, Theron and I have been doing this for almost 7 years now.
That is great.
But we've been with you for a year, and this is literally the first time I've been in a room with Lisa during all the time that we've done.
I had to touch him on the shoulder. So it's good to see you guys. So what's percolating today? So I sent you guys both a note earlier today and didn't hear back from you. So I was wondering, what's a normal day like for you, Theron, and a normal day like for you, Brian? Theron first.
Well, thank you, Lisa, for one, putting up with us every week. I'm probably the one that actually responds to the topics depending on the mood I'm in. Brian actually will oftentimes get into topics that he wants to share. But also, thank you to Georgia State University. Your president, Brian Blake, is doing an outstanding job. Thank you to the Andrew Young School of Policy and the Social Action Network. So a normal day for me is I give my colleague and business partner, Lori Smith, who's here, until about maybe 9 o'clock to get going. She needs her morning coffee because she's usually out late night
at some
community events and doing dinners, making sure the firm that I have the great pleasure of working with, four outstanding women. We do a lot of lobbying, government affairs, consulting. And then Lisa today was interesting, and Brian can relate to this, and he warned me. I have a 2-year-old son, Tyson Lynn Johnson, who's at the Atlanta Speech School. Aww. And I did my first pickup today at 12 o'clock. So for the parents in the room that does the carpool line, I had to download the app.
Yep.
I had to actually announce that I was parked.
The Pick My Kid app.
Yeah, Pick My Kid app. You know, I don't like shouting out apps that I don't have any investment in it. But and so picked him up and then took him home and just a bunch of calls with a lot of clients. And then, honestly, I'm really happy to be here. But if I wasn't here tonight, My colleagues and I will probably be doing a lot of dinners, a lot of fundraisers. We got a lot of people asking us for money, asking our clients for money. And then I will get home pretty late and try to kiss my son, catch him before he goes to bed, and then do a little work.
Start all over again. Brian, what about you? You got a five-year-old. Brian has a five-year-old.
Yes, I do.
Wow.
And so she also goes to Atlanta's B School. So it is the sponsor of Political Breakfast.
They get both of our money.
Yes. I'll have to do Political Breakfast for the next 400 years to pay for 1 year of speech school. So in the mornings, I take her in. And this morning, we had discussed before getting in the car, her mother and I and Quinn, do you want to come tonight? Or do you want to go to your hip-hop class? Yes, there, my daughter goes to hip-hop class. She's very multicultural.
Does she listen to 21 Savage?
No. Yeah. Please let me know. 21 Savage is here tonight. After we had the discussion last week, I want to make sure that everyone's safe. And so we're driving in to school, and she goes, she said she wanted to come here. Uh-huh. And then she goes, Dad, I don't want to listen to you in a chair talking like the news.
On and on. Huh?
So hip-hop class it was tonight. Yeah.
Well, we're going to jump right in and talk about some of the issues that I referred to early on. The midterm elections, 49 days away, right? And a lot of you told me that you're thinking about the midterm elections. And one race that stands out and continues to stand out is that Senate race between Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock. And last week we talked about polling and what the polls show and what the polls don't show. Polls this week show a very, very tight race. And just kind of quickly want to jump off and get your take on it today as opposed to last week. I think what Warnock is polling at 44% at the latest poll and Herschel Walker at 46%.
That's one of the polls. And it's been all over the board. You know, the AJC poll came out today. I don't know if we have any AJC people here tonight. Some said they were coming. But I have a problem with the poll, even though it's really good news for Republicans. I mean, because the polling, first of all, no one's going by 10 points in Georgia, right? So the AJC poll today, for those of you who didn't see it, has Kemp at 50 and Abrams at 42, and then 10-point spreads between Burt Jones and Charlie Bailey in the LG race, and then 10 points between Chris Carr and Jen Jordan in the Attorney General's race. I simply do not believe that there's a 10-point spread anywhere in Georgia. You basically start at 45, 46, 47, no matter what your party is. You can't get below that here. I can't imagine how stupid you'd have to be to get, and you'd have to like figure out a way to pay to tell people how stupid you are to get below those numbers in Georgia. So part of the reason why I have a problem with it is one.
You see what I put up with every week. No, I'm kidding.
The AJC poll has that the percentage of the population of black voters at 29%. This is very important because it has huge partisan implications. I think it's going to be more like 31-32% black in the electorate. That really matters. And 49% of the poll is people who self-identified as conservative. I don't think that's right either. I think that's too high. So I think there's a Republican bias in that particular poll. And the great thing of interest to me is we've had a Democratic bias in polling. Theron's heard me complain about this forever. For the last 10 years, you know, in 2014, Nathan Deal won by 7 points, which is a pretty big spread. And polling up until the weekend before showed it in a dead heat headed toward a runoff. And I went out on election night in 2014 when I was working for Deal, and I said, at 7:01, we're going to win by 7 points. Mm. And the media looked at me like with pity, because they just thought, oh, you're so dumb. You know, the polling shows that this is much higher. The Democrat may win. So this is a reverse of that historical pattern. And there's another poll out, the mayor's poll, but I've talked enough for now.
No, you did a good job.
I figured you would like that, right? No.
Actually, it may be in a reverse endorsement kind of thing.
No more fundraising to dry up.
No, Brian is right. Listen, I think the polls to me, Lisa, they're kind of all over the place, but there are some common threads. And so I agree with Brian that it's all about how you weight the poll. I do believe that it would be in the mid to low 30% as far as African-American turnout. Mm-hmm. And while there has been things that we got to address as a party to get more African-Americans and more Hispanic and more Asian voters out, I do believe if you just look at the demographic shift, if you just look at the growth in this state, that number is going to be higher. I think Senator Warnock is going to win this race, and the polling is kind of showing it, but let's give Herschel Walker some credit. I mean, he is picking up some ground. I mean, Brian had the bold statement about 2 months ago, and I pushed back on him, and you questioned him on it, and he said, you know, Warnock was in trouble. Yeah. I disagree with that, but I think I still disagree that he's in trouble, but I do think they understand that they got to take this race very seriously, and they're trying to figure out how do you draw the comparison, but also draw the comparison amongst like how tying Herschel Walker, who's never run for office before, to an establishment Republican Party. That's going to be difficult to do because we heard that Trump got him in a race, but Trump hasn't really done anything for him since. And he's really unorthodox in his campaigning. We'll get into that a little bit later, too. We all laugh. I think that's a fair word. It's unorthodox. That's a nice way of saying it. But Senator Raphael Warnock has gone to Washington and really been a strong leader for all of Georgians and has done some things that I think the left, the progressive movement, can be very proud of. And I think he's done some things that the right and the middle can be very proud of as well. So I think the undecideds in this race, when I look at those three polls that Brian referenced, the mayor's poll, AJC UGA poll, and then the other.
Is there a Quinnipiac?
Yeah, a Quinnipiac poll as well. So there were three that came out.
Right.
The last thing I'll say is this. As two people who've been in the throes of campaigns with 49 days left to go, let me tell you what the campaigns are thinking. You've probably got about, well, these guys got so much money. But back when I was running mayoral's race and in congressional races, and you've worked on the gubernatorial, I worked on the presidential, when you're 49 days out, you probably got maybe 2 to 3 polls left. You got two polls that is going to really get into like, all right, this is going to be a 1,000-person sample poll, likely voters, and then you'll do a tracker. And you want to track all the negative stuff, all the positive stuff you've thrown out about your candidate. So I think the campaigns now with so much money, they're probably going to do 6 to 7 more polls, and you'll start to see the race sort of shaping up and what they're going to say on October 14th. And if Herschel decides to go after Warnock on A and Warnock decides to go after Herschel on A or B or C, and then you're going to see that those are things that they see in their polling. So the one thing you can't poll, though, as somebody who's been in the middle of campaigns is enthusiasm. And then lastly, we don't really know what the voter turnout model is going to be. This state has changed so much. I mean, just look at this room. I mean, this room shows you a lot about Georgia. This, to me, is a reflection of Georgia. And so you got young people, you got older seasoned voters, you got new voters who have never heard of Brian Kemp, Stacey Abrams until they got here, and now they're being inundated with ads. So we just got to really figure out who's going to turn out. And more importantly, how many people will turn out early and vote absentee and take vote by mail. That shocked me a little bit during the primary, how Republicans really utilized that. And you had a lot of Democrats vote early as well.
And let me say, on the mayor's poll, on the same day that AJC poll shows Herschel up 2 points on Warnock. The mayor's poll shows Warnock up 6 on Herschel, even at the same time showing Kemp in a fairly comfortable lead.
Right.
And so going back to what Theron said about the commonalities, what we're seeing in the trend lines is Republicans on the state level, so you're talking governor, LG, attorney general, insurance commissioner, et cetera, consistently winning in polling. You know, showing never a huge lead, although today's are an outlier. The 10-point things are outliers, but consistent leads. And so I think we can assume that Republicans up and down the ballot are ahead and that the Warnock-Walker race is anybody's game. And when I say Warnock was in trouble, when I said that months ago, I've been proven right, in my opinion. he has spent more than $50 million. He has almost universal name ID from being in a campaign 2 years ago, 18 months ago, that $800 million was spent in. And he's an incumbent, has all of the advantages of incumbency. He has a huge Senate staff that's able to like call stakeholder groups all the time and say, hey, what can I do for you? Which, by the way, they do. And I say that as a credit to them. Warnock's constituent services staff has been fantastic. They've done a great job. I spoke to mayors, 50 mayors last week in Columbus for a convention. And I was like, how many of you have gotten a phone call from Warnock? Every hand went up. And I see Warnock or his staff. That's really impressive. So he has all of these advantages. And again, let me repeat, has spent $50 million, way more than Herschel Walker has up to this point, and is in a dead heat.
Yeah. Let me, real quick on that, Lisa. I know we're trying to get through it, but I got to push back on that. So Warnock is leading in the polls. The recent polls have come out, even though they don't have him above 50%, there's only one poll that had it reversed. The other two have Warnock winning. So don't let Brian fool you that Warnock is behind the polls. Secondly, is that...
I would want to be way higher up.
$50 million. Any Republican right now, as Brian just talked about, is going to get 45% of the vote of Georgia. Literally one of you all, the gentleman here with the two red hats, you guys could run as Republicans. I don't know your party, but I think I have a good idea. They got that. But they could run right now, right, and get 45% of the vote in Georgia, because that's how many people are going to vote down ballot. So, and Warnock is going to get, if he does absolutely nothing from this point on, he's going to get 45 to 46%. So as Will Barnes told me recently, the former governor of Georgia, the hundreds of millions of dollars that are being spent are really being spent on anywhere between 7 to 9% of the people, of the population. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get those folks to break your way. And I think that while Brian does an excellent job talking about how the senator has spent so much money, he's still lacking in the polls, but he is leading. It's just honestly, it just shows your reflection of where we are as a state that people are saying, nope, I don't care. I'm going to vote for him because he's Republican. And look, I'm going to say this publicly. My boy, Uncle Joe, Biden, gas prices are going down. Mm-hmm. Inflation is going down. Yeah. You know, we got some numbers coming out, right? But if his numbers can get close to 40, they're right there. The polls that I saw, 37 to 38. But look, Senator Warnock had some headwind. He had some headwind with President Biden, who in our state was not as popular as he will be, I think, by November. And so I think a lot of that he sort of had to deal with. But he has been an independent senator. He's working with both sides. And then ultimately, look, I'm going to say it. When this debate happens on October 14th, I think the Georgia voters are going to witness the difference between these two gentlemen. I think they are going to see the professionalism. They're going to see how prepared they are. They're going to see, one, be able to talk about what he's been able to do as a U.S. senator, as a person who has been in the state his entire life, has been working for people who need the most. And I think you're going to see another guy who will, you know, I think, do his best to talk about the issue.
Well, speaking of October 14th, our politics reporter at WBE, Sam Greenglass, did a story today and where he quoted Walker saying this, and this is a quote. "I'm this country boy, you know, I'm not that smart. He's a preacher. He's a smart man. He wears these nice suits. So he's going to show up and embarrass me on October the 14th, and I'm going to do my best." What kind of political ploy is that, Brian? That can't help him in any way, right?
Well, it sounded a lot like Kirby Smart's news conference on Monday talking about the upcoming Kent State game.
Okay.
I mean, you would think we were playing the L.A. Rams the way he's talking about Kent State. And so I think it's just an old, like, athlete's ploy, talking up the opposition, lowering expectations for yourself. I'm hoping in the debate that there is a sprint portion that I think Herschel would kill in.
His favor in some way?
I think he is lowering expectations to some degree. I'm not saying that it's strategic, but that is what he's doing there. And one thing that I'm hearing consistently, and I've seen journalists writing about this recently. I've always said that Herschel had to get better in his communications. That a lot of what he was saying was confusing, and you could tell that he needed to like bone up on some of the issues. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that has happened recently from people who've been going to his events, it's just gotten much better. And I think October, I'm not spinning here. I think there's no spinning what people see, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we'll see on October the 14th if he can get over that bar. Mm-hmm. And until then, it's all speculation.
This can't help him.
Well, you know what, Lisa, I had two reactions to it. The first reaction, because I'm a country boy, and people who know me in the audience, I always say I'm a little country boy from Athens, Georgia, right? But it's I know, right? It's kind of a unique thing because Athens is kind of country rural, but not really. But I said it anyway. It works. It works for me. But when I first saw it, I was like, God, like, I can't believe it. Like, and I actually heard it. You know, I heard it today. I actually downloaded the audio. You guys did a good job of sending it to us beforehand. And then when I start thinking, to what Brian's saying, like, I think either it was strategic or maybe he didn't know what he was doing, but he's really lowering the expectation. And then this whole thing about expensive suits, you know, Herschel Walker has made way more personal money mm-hmm. than Reverend Raphael mm-hmm. Warnock, oh, right? Wow. I guarantee you that Herschel Walker can buy probably 1,000 more nice suits than Senator Warnock. But what he's also doing is that, you know, look, I don't expect me to come here and just win this debate or win this election by this debate. Mm-hmm. So what Senator Warnock's got to do is make sure that, one, he's prepared for him to try to throw some October surprise at him. Mm-hmm. Or at least what he's done by this comment, strategically or not, is that he's sort of neutralized himself to say, look, I don't expect to win this debate. So he's telling my supporters, don't judge me off this debate performance because I'm going to lose. And this preacher who wears expensive suits is going to blow it away. So, I think that he is not going to be able to dodge the debate. Now, I have some people who are taking the over-under that whether or not he may not show up
he
to this debate.
He may not show up. Okay.
And let me tell you the rationale behind that. Now, I think he's going to show up because people are saying, look, if the poll numbers that Brian are trying to articulate to us shows that he's tightening this race, or maybe he's within striking distance. And why would he put himself on the stage to just blow that momentum, right? Mm-hmm. But I just think that, to me, that will give the Georgia voters to say, look, why should we hire someone for a job when they're not willing to interview for it and they're not willing to audition? So, but that is talks amongst a lot of Democrat and Republican circles. I haven't decided if I'm going to take the over-under just yet, mm-hmm. but there are some bets going around where he may not show up.
I'll take that bet.
To the one.
I'll take that bet. Absolutely. Yeah. This guy's an athlete. He is a competitor. And even if everyone else in the state thinks that Warnock's going to be way better in this debate than Herschel Walker thinks he can win this because he's a competitor. He's a winner. And that's how he thinks. I am going to come out ahead on this. And he's going to mm-hmm. show up. And we'll see. It could be one hell of an hour of television, right? And we don't really know what's going to happen. This is an unknown. But I think you're going to see a lot of people tuning into this in a way that you don't normally watch debates.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of felt the same way about the Loeffler-Warnock debate 2 years ago. That was sort of must-see TV during that runoff. Mm-hmm. The stakes were extraordinarily high, literally control of the U.S. Senate on the line. Mm-hmm. And whereas Loeffler's not a great performer by any means, that's not her skill set. And Warnock is a great performer. He is fantastic on camera, just a natural, and it kind of comes from that preacher background, mm-hmm. years of experience in front of a crowd. Warnock was not spellbinding in that debate. Mm. I'm a pretty astute observer of what's going on. I don't remember anything he said. Mm-hmm. He was on defense all night. And while she was repeating and got mocked for repeating radical socialist 12 times in 30 minutes, here we are 18 months later, and everybody remembers what her message was.
That one moment.
Yeah. Everyone remembers, and that is what message penetration is. She pulled it off. I'm not saying anybody won, but I say that to say I'm not sure Warnock is going to blow anybody's socks off. He was very defensive. He was never on the attack. And I think he's going to need to be. He is not playing from a position of strength right now in the polling. He's got to have a kill shot.
Well, if you call me a radical liberal socialist on this stage 20 times, I think I would be on the defensive as well. But I disagree. I think Senator Warnock in that debate, because I watched it and we talked about it on the show, he clearly won a debate because Senator Loeffler had been in Washington as a senator. She was chosen to be given a seat to go serve the people of Georgia, and she could not really communicate and articulate what she had done. Now, remind you, this is a different climate. She was in a very tough position because she had all this loyalty to a president at the time who was very unpopular in Georgia, who I believe brought a lot of folks on the ticket down. And then secondly, I think Senator Warnock did talk about a lot of issues. He talked about healthcare. He talked about education. He talked a lot about veterans, right, being from Savannah. He also talked about his role in the church and also his role in registering voters. So I remember all of this, but you're right. I mean, she attacked the guy trying to really basically make him out to be this person who he's not. Now, let me just say this, because I'm a huge Herschel Walker football fan. Y'all have heard me say this. And I remember walking into the national championship when Georgia unfortunately lost to Alabama.
We won that game. I have to disagree. That was Big Ten refs.
That's up for another debate.
It was fake news.
Tyler Simmons was onside.
So I remember as a young kid growing up in Athens, Georgia, listening to Larry Munson and watching the football games with my grandfather, my uncle, the athlete, right? But look, we can't ignore. I mean, look at the ads. These are things that, in his own words, that he's making up. He is saying things that are not true. Mm-hmm. He has a troubled past that is clearly being talked about. And so I think if you're saying that he's going to blow it away, he's going to have to answer some of these questions directly from reporters who are going to say, no, tell me about the 1 through 10 issues that your opponent has laid out that you would be involved in, from your companies to your affiliations to your misrepresentation of your role in these companies, some of your personal issues from the past. And so I think while he's going to try to talk about Senator Warnock, he's going to have to answer some very, very tough questions that he has not been asked yet directly.
Negative attack ads. Raise your hand. Do they work, in your opinion, when you're deciding between two candidates, or do they not? Do they work? Do they not? We're seeing that ad with...
Of course they work.
Yeah, with Herschel Walker.
We wouldn't do it if it didn't work.
Well, that domestic violence ad is playing more and more and more. Theron and Brian, do you think that's going to lead down a path where it may backfire on Warnock?
Well, I said this earlier on in a publication that was print, and I said, look, you got to be careful with two things. Mm-hmm. You know, Herschel Walker has come out and basically talked about in a book, and has talked about this openly, that he suffered from mental illness. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us either have siblings or family members or friends who have mental illness. And so it's a very serious condition that we all must take very seriously. And it's probably one of the leading causes of, you know, a lot of detrimental things that are happening to people, deaths and families being broken apart. So you got to be very careful to make sure that you being Warnock, that you don't fall into that trap. With the domestic abuse, that's another one you got to be very careful with as well, because, I mean, it's that ad when I hear the woman, I think it was his ex-wife, talking about it. But I think if you're Senator Warnock, you really don't have to go any further, because as Brian talked about, $50 million and maybe a fifth of that has been spent on maybe that one particular narrative, right? And so, you know, if you go at Herschel Walker about that, and if he's prepared for the question, and if he jams you up on it, then you give him an opportunity, because that's what people are going to talk about. Man, Warnock went at him about the the domestic abuse. And so I think, honestly, it's not like he's trying to kind of hide it, because it's out there. Early on, we were talking about how many kids he had, and that's nothing wrong with that. Look, if you have kids, you take care of them, that's fine. I just think that if you're running for office, we should get an accurate count. but he cleared that up, right? He cleared it up. So I think my free unsolicited advice to the Senator Warnock campaign, because they're not paying me, is I don't think you need to spend time telling people about some of the things that, I believe in second chance. Everyone deserves a second chance. Everyone deserves an opportunity to redeem itself. Yeah. And I think Herschel Walker is doing that. And look, let me say this. As a black man watching this other black man make millions and millions of dollars to come from where he came from in Southeast Georgia, was it Johnson County, Georgia? I used to work in that district, working for former Congressman Barrow, so I know that sort of CSRA, that Southern Eastern part. I used to actually drive through there when you're coming from Athens on 15 to get to Savannah. Brian's kind of shocked that I remember all this stuff, because he likes to say I just sit behind a computer screen all day and just make money. No, I actually just get in the streets every now and then. So no, we in the black community, let me just say this, we love the athlete, the guy who went on to make a way out of poverty, made his way out of Southeast, went to a great university, went on to play NFL football, AFL. But now you're running for U.S. Senate, an elite club of 100 men and women to represent this country. And I just think that that's the difference of how he's going to be judged versus some of the stuff that he's done in his past.
Let me tell you about negative advertising. I will come back to this point. If you're on a campaign that has the ability to track in polling, that is, like, take a really small sample a few nights a week and poll, and you kind of see, you can see trend lines. Now, you're not getting a big enough sample to have a scientific poll, but you can see what's happening. And there are times when you put up a negative ad and you see the numbers move within days. It takes a little bit to sink in, and you know it's working. It's and you should have had polling on the front end showing that message would work. So I know scientifically it works because I've watched it happen in the polling and make a big difference. What's interesting here is that millions have been spent telling us that Herschel Walker put a gun to his ex-wife's head and said he was going to blow her brains out, that he threatened to have a shootout with cops. Mm-hmm. Nothing happened, right? I mean, we're tracking and nothing's happening. Mm-hmm. It's not making a difference. Now, is it because people don't find it believable? No, I think it's believable. I think he's inoculated himself on these issues somewhat by talking about his mental illness. And when you attack those things, you are attacking someone with a mental illness, someone who has owned up to it, someone who has talked about it. And that ad that has the ex-wife talking about the gun to her head, Herschel Walker was sitting next to her in that interview. They don't show you that. But that ex-wife has also endorsed him in this campaign. Like, she's fully behind him.
Sitting next to her with a gun, or no?
No.
I'm sorry.
I wouldn't say that again.
No.
He's sitting there with her in that interview, which you don't get. This is somebody who has confronted these things.
Right.
Now, if Herschel Walker had a domestic violence issue in October, that would be huge. That would move numbers really quickly. Mm-hmm. But they put it out there, and it's not moving the numbers. Mm-hmm. So, I don't think that message is working just the way that the radical socialist message didn't work against Warnock. Mm-hmm. It failed miserably despite a lot of money being put behind that message because people didn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And they didn't believe it because one thing Warnock did extraordinarily well was build a brand. He is one of the best branded politicians I've ever seen in the state. And I was a bit confused about it. We debated this on the show back in 2020. I was like, Theron, why in the world are Ossoff and Warnock doing these positive ads, hanging Christmas lights and walking dogs?
He was.
This doesn't make any sense. They need to be ripping Perdue and Loeffler's throats out every day to mobilize their people. And the Republican theory on the race was there is no middle. It's just base mobilization. And both sides were using different strategies. The Republicans went for base mobilization, and that didn't work partly because a lot of their base was told that their votes didn't count. Mm-hmm. A lot of their base was told the machine changed your votes, right? So a lot of them stayed home, in that runoff. Whereas Warnock and Ossoff made a play for the middle, and they did it by saying, we're not crazy. We are people like you. You would be happy to have us in your neighborhood. I might even come and walk your dog. And by the way, when my dog poops, it wasn't really his dog, by the way. I clean it up and throw it away.
I was pointing that out. Yeah.
That dog lives in Dunwoody.
He never said it was his dog. But, he never said, I'm walking my dog.
There was a strong implication. Who walked other people's dogs?
There's dog walkers, Brian. I have dog walkers.
There was an implication that this guy owned Alvin, the big.
How many dog walkers do we have now?
Yeah.
Look at us, Brian.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, you walk other people's dogs. I don't believe that.
No, they do. Thank you.
You can run ads saying you walk other people's dogs. That's not believable. So, the negative ads right now aren't working. And I think both guys have extraordinary strong brands. I describe Warnock's, and it really is brilliant. He is so good. He is such a great messenger and communicator. My parents are here. They're, lifelong Republicans. They'll call me and be like, I really like Warnock's ads. Those are really.
Don't put your parents on Front Street like that. How are y'all doing? It's good to see you again.
Yes.
The last event we were at, you know, I got a little, you know, but it's good to see y'all back.
Get this. Okay, this is honest, true story. So we did an event in Marietta the month after the 2018 governor's race. Mom and Dad were there. And it was an overwhelmingly and very raucous, very pissed off Democratic crowd. And I go, let me tell y'all something. The election wasn't stolen. And I got booed and hissed, people screaming at me. And now, of course, Democrats, if you say the election was stolen, you're an idiot. But back then, they're all for that message, right? It was because Abrams said that it had been stolen from her. And they were like, yeah, I don't know if we want to go back to any more of those.
Let's bring you, the students, into the conversation. I read a poll, it was done by Harvard, I think in April of 2022, that said the 18 to 29 voting bloc is one of the most important blocs coming up this midterm election. But there was also a large percentage that said a lot of you don't feel like your voices are being heard. True or false? So then, Brian and Theron, how do we bring them more into the narrative in 49 days? How can that happen? And why isn't that happening? We talk a lot about female voters, so how can we talk more about this voting bloc and make them feel a part of the process?
Well, the way that young voters get attention is the same way that old voters get attention. Show up and vote, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. that's how you do it. I got a call yesterday from a D.C. public relations firm, and they were doing some group had hired them to poll operatives about Social Security. And they were like, is Social Security something that candidates are talking about? No. Mm-hmm. Do you have any concerns about Social Security? Yes, I have tremendous concerns about Social Security, but no one's going to talk about it because it's political death, right? Because old people vote. You know, 53% of our electorate is over 50, and a significant portion is over 65. And those guys show up. And I know young people today are no different than young people of any generation. There's never been massive turnout amongst people 18 to 35 ever since we've moved it to 18 in the early 70s. And if you show up, you will start being paid attention to. Now, I don't think that politicians care. I think that young Americans, the Gen Zs, many of you are Gen Z, are getting screwed. Mm. And you're getting screwed because we don't change anything about entitlements, because you're paying the highest ever higher education cost, because housing has gone out of control and we're not building enough to house your generation. There's no entry-level housing available. Mm. And when you go into the workforce, you're going to be paying what's essentially 12%, 13% of your salary to go straight to people over 65, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a promise probably not going to be kept for you. Do something about it. Mm. Do something about it. Mm. And you do it by standing up. And to me, it's not loan forgiveness of debt. That's a scam. What we need to do is we need a long-term fix for access to higher education. We need lower cost. Mm-hmm. We need to fix from the front end, not the back end. Mm-hmm.
So on a personal note, Lily, thank you for the coconut juice water. You warned me before, but it does have chunks in it.
And I got a little.
For those of you who may have your eyes on me, I was playing around with the can. I'm very confident that the Democratic Party has done an exceptional job of campaigning to voters between 18 and 29. And don't take my word for it. Every presidential election year, every gubernatorial election, congressional elections, senatorial, local elections, we always do better with young voters. Now, Republicans have made some gains, but if you look at the 2020 election, the 2021 election, mm-hmm. and I just want to say thank you for all the 18 to 29-year-old voters in the room. Joe Biden does not win Georgia. Mm-hmm. Raphael Warnock does not win Georgia. And John Ossoff does not win Georgia without the young vote. So give yourselves a round of applause for that. Now, where it comes
down.
That's
true.
I mean, I echo that. And I think that if those three individuals were sitting here right now, they would echo the same thing. And look, and they would tell you, we need you to come back out. Because what Brian just articulated to you is a very tough resource decision you have to make when you're in the campaign. My mom is a seasoned voter. Now, I can say her age publicly because Lisa, she let me put it on Instagram this weekend.
Just as long as you get permission.
Yeah, I got permission.
As long as you get permission.
And, you know, my mom is a 78-year-old voter, right? She is going, not every time, but she's going early. And more importantly, she's going to make sure that everyone in the family, friends, church, social group are going to the polls, right? Mm-hmm. And so what Brian is saying is that, like, look, if I'm inside of a campaign, I got to make a resource decision. I'm going to spend the majority of my money focusing on the people who actually turn out the most. Guys, it's just simple math. We're at Georgia State University. You guys are all very talented, smart, and you made a good decision to go to this state school, yeah. Pay a little less in tuition, but get a great education as
great
well.
Great campus, by
and
the
great
way.
Campus.
It's just growing. Parking
is a little tough.
Yeah.
I mean, we represent a couple parking companies. I think we can figure it out. But let me get to my point. So, I've done the studies. I saw the poll. I think when I talk to 18 to 29-year-olds, these are the things that they tell me that's important to them. Number one, you want to be able to graduate from a four-year institution, a two-year institution, a technical school, mm-hmm. or be an entrepreneur and be able to come out and get a job. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to not only compete locally, mm-hmm. Nationally, but really your competition, you all, you know this, is global, right? Everyone that you're really competing against are people who are trying to come to this great country that we call home, America, and compete for your jobs. The second thing I think that you want is what Brian touched on. You want to be able to afford to live in the city in which you want to actually have fun, but also make some money. And many of you all probably want to work from home. You want to have that option mm-hmm. to basically go into an office or maybe, you know, stay at home and do the things that me and Brian and Lisa do every day. And that is get on a podcast for an hour and make a little bit of money talking about politics. Mm-hmm. But I also think that you all are very concerned about what life looks like after college. And that's why I think that President Biden's campaign promise that he fulfilled to basically give student loan forgiveness and eliminate debt for student loans was a monumental moment with young people. Mm. Now Brian is looking at me because he knows I know my audience, yeah. Right? But now, I will give Brian some credit. His parents know this. For the last 5 weeks, Lisa, he's been coming on a podcast telling me that's the first time he said a scam. That's a new talking point. But he's been talking.
That was the wrong word.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's all right.
It's a cynical ploy.
Cynical ploy. So what Democrats have got to do, and now I'm going to be critical for just a second, is that we got to be bold. We got to do exactly what I just did. We should have people on every single college campus talking about, hey, look, you may not like how it happened. The Republicans are going to tell you that I didn't have the president didn't have the ability to do it. He couldn't have the legal pathway to do this executive order. But I don't know about you all. When I graduated from Clark Atlanta University, and if I had a knew that thank you. Oh, see, are you in the house? All right. You know, I talked about this on the podcast. I had taken out three loans, and my mom took out two Parent PLUS loans. Now, I love my institution, but we're a little expensive over at CAU. Not as much as Georgia State. I used to take my mini master's class here in the summer. My friend Makisha is in the audience. I know she remembers taking those classes as well. But if you had told me that I would have $10,000 to maybe $15,000 of debt forgiven, now that's not going to take my whole balance away. But I'm gonna be able to negotiate with the loan company and say, yeah, let's negotiate this interest rate. Mm-hmm. I'm maybe going to defer it a little bit, right, because I'm not working. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that the Biden campaign and Democrats got to be more bold on that. Last two things I think that young people care about is climate change. Mm. I mean, the guy, I'm going to point him out first. I won't say his name. He say, don't listen to the podcast, but you're going to listen to it after this because you clap when I say climate change. Yeah. Climate change is something that Democrats have done a really good job of messaging on. Republicans are not talking about it, right? And at a time where we see what's happening, what just happened in Puerto Rico, what's happening in Turks and Caicos. Brian, I was talking about an article. My wife and I just got back from Turks. Again, this is all public. You know, she put it on the social media. But the first thing that she starts saying is that she's like, well, climate change. And I'm like, well, babe, hold on. It is kind of hurricane season. Right? Yeah. But here's the example I'm making. What's on my wife's mind, right? A 44-year-old black woman, Ivy League educated, mom, and is going to vote, right? That's what she's thinking about. And then the last thing, and this may get a mixed reaction, but I think I'm in Atlanta at Georgia State. It's going to be a good thing. But I think also, you know, people want to figure out how we can decriminalize marijuana in this country.
Why isn't Stacey Abrams saying that, right? That's when they...
I think she said it, Brian. She hasn't used it as much in paid advertisement. But hell, she better be listening to this podcast because I just said it. And I got a rousing applause. But I just think that the way that we look at this country and how you got people who have served time and how marijuana, particularly medical marijuana, can be used for a good cause. But the fact that we have not decriminalized marijuana in this country is something that I think that Democrats should speak boldly about. And look, my mom, I asked her. I said, Mom, you know, what do you think about...
How much pot do you smoke, Mom?
Well, my mom is a good Christian woman. I would be appalled if my mom told me she smoked marijuana. But here's what my mom said. She said, look, I think people should be able to do it legally because they're doing it anyway. And if they're not going out here and it's, you know, the direct results in criminal activity and things like this, then we should decriminalize it. So I just gave Democrats 5 reasons why I believe that when it comes go time on November 8th, that we are going to do what we've been doing, that is dominate the votes with this 18 to 29-year-old group. But we can't take them for granted. They are getting a little bit more conservative. A lot of younger Black men that I talk to, he's raising his hand. I got to talk to that brother after the show. But they are getting a little conservative, and it's based on economics. It's based on Democrats have got to do a better job of making sure that we got a good economic measure.
I do think that marijuana would be an interesting thing for Stacey to throw into the campaign because it may mobilize young voters. Because it has in other states, we've seen it jack up the turnout rate. If this happens and it goes to the ballot, and I want to be the operative working on it because the shirts are going to say "Dope for Hope."
That with a serious face. Didn't
no,
he?
I know what he. I know what he's meant.
And we'll use the tax dollars to give you guys better Hope scholarships, so you don't need Biden's buy your vote plan.
Okay. All right. Drop the mic after that. We want to hear from you now. And what we're going to do is we're going to quickly bring the camera down and we're going to have our mic set up. And Eric, are you still here? I talked to you beforehand. We talked about loan forgiveness. I want you first to the mic and tell Brian why it's not a scam and why it's so important to you. But any of you, all of you who have questions, line up and you can ask Brian and Theron questions. And while we're getting set up, I'm just going to talk to Brian Theron quickly about your last 49 days. What did the last 49 days look like for you as strategists, as consultants and things of that nature?
I'll be quick. I think what I'm going to be paying close attention to, Lisa, and shout out, this is National Voter Registration Day. So for those who are listening, those who are watching us on television, please... Please make sure you go register to vote. I would say something that would get Brian. I would mention those 2 words to get him all riled up, but I won't. But no, please make sure everyone checks their voter registration. If you've moved, people who've gotten divorced, remarried, you want to hyphenate your name, different things, make sure you're registered to vote. But no, I think I'm going to be looking very closely at the voter registration numbers, where they end up. And then 2, how many people are actually requesting absentee ballot applications? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, early on, about 2 weeks before early voting, I'll start looking at polls. But that first week of early voting, Lisa and Brian, will show us, I think, how this race is going to turn out. Mm. If you see a huge surge from Republicans, then I think, the momentum is on their side. Now, if you see a huge surge from Democrats, that's good as well. But traditionally, Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of Republicans are sort of election day voters. We saw that in the primary between Kemp and Perdue. So I think that those are the things that I'm going to be looking forward to. And then lastly, I think the October surprise. Mm. I think there are going to be so many things that are going to be made up that are true or false about these candidates. And we just better get our popcorn ready because it's going to be a show.
Brian?
Well, I think a lot of the messaging from this point forward is going to get drowned out because there's going to be too much of it. And it just becomes noise at some juncture. What I'll be watching is Republican counties and Democrat counties. Like, look at DeKalb. How is turnout in early voting and absentee ballot requests compared to 2018? Not 2020. Mm-hmm. You got it. Midterm is different than a presidential. It's going to be a lower turnout. You know, and then look at Republican areas like Forsyth County and Cherokee County. And are you seeing numbers similar to 2018? And don't forget, 2018 was a 1.3%, 1.4% difference. So yeah, very, very narrow. And despite the poll showing this big difference, I don't think we're going to be able to predict winners really until election night.
Wow.
One, so I don't know how you can poll in an electorate that since 2019 has grown by 1.6 million voters.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And it's grown by that much because everybody in Georgia is registered to vote, right? There's a newsflash for you and all this voter suppression. 96% of eligible Georgians are registered to vote. But yet Stacey says she lost because of voter suppression.
All right, let's go to the question. So we can get through the both lines, keep them as short as possible, as direct as possible. Erica, we're going to begin with you.
Okay. Hello, my name is Erica Warren. I'm a junior here at Georgia State. I'm also a member of Social Action Alliance. Ooh, can I get a... Yeah, awesome. So as a Black woman, student loans are not only a requirement, if I could say, coming from a low-income family, it's kind of a necessity because, wanting to get an education has been, the forefront of my life, trying to, do better for my family and, future generations to come. So how will this new student loan forgiveness bill, two initiative, affect the outcome of local campaigns? And will it be something that our candidates will implement into our future platforms? Because, something that we should probably worry about in the future.
I'll go first and be quick. Thank you, Erica, for your question and congratulations to you. Yeah, I think you hit on something that Lisa does a really good job every week of trying to get us to not just be political hacks that kind of just give the typical Democrat and Republican sort of spin, because we do spin well on this show. But that's why I try to actually be relatable. I'm just like you, Erica. When I went to school at Clark Atlanta University, I was on a football scholarship. And then once I realized I was not going to be the next Deion Sanders, I had to figure out and I'd find a way to make one. That's our motto, right? And so had it not been for student loans and had it not been for my mom, and I shared this, saying, hey, son, my credit is not the best. Let me go pay off some bills here and there. Let me pay this credit card debt down a little bit. I'm like, mama, ooh, you got a lot of credit card debt. But, had it not been for the loans, I wouldn't have made it through Clark Atlanta University. And I said this, too, on the podcast. The proudest day in my life, I had a few of them, but one of the proudest days in my life is when I called my mom and I made a little bit of money. And I said, mom, look, we're going to call Navient and we're going to tell them to pull up all the accounts, give us the grand total, and I'm going to pay them off. And I hope that all of you all will have that opportunity to do so one day.
Yeah. Yeah. Hi, Jack Bernard. I'm a sort of a numbers junkie when it comes to races. When I looked at the first race you're talking about with Warnock and Walker, it is a toss-up. I mean, it's definitely a toss-up. The four polls that I looked at, two were for, two were against. It is a toss-up. Probably shouldn't be, by the way, in my opinion. But in any case, getting back to the other race, the governor's race, there were 12 polls taken. 12 polls taken. The average shows that Stacey is down by 5.3%. That's the average of 12 surveys that have been taken since the beginning of the year. I've met with Stacey one-on-one when she was minority leader. She's very impressive, and she's very moderate, by the way. She's being painted as a radical liberal, blah, 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 which, by the way, I am. But
I never would have guessed.
She's not. All three of the two doctors with me and myself were all to the left of Stacey Abrams. She has gone out and tried to push Medicaid expansion and the abortion issue. Yet she's down 5 points. She's a very bright woman. She's probably one of the smartest I've ever met. What can she do to turn this election around? Because as things stand, she's going to lose.
Dope for hope. That would be my plan. Here's her problem. I always use this example. She got too big everywhere else, and it hurt her at home. She did this tour around the country, selling this book, giving speeches. She didn't do one in Georgia.
I mean, she is the president of United Earth on Star Trek, not somebody from Georgia at this juncture. You know, she's on The View and Jimmy Kimmel. And when that happens, there's this inverse correlation. You get too big here, it hurts you back home. And that has happened. Let me tell you, and let me show you some data on that since you're a numbers guy. I mentioned the Maris poll that has her down, I think, 6 points maybe, that came out today. Here's what's fascinating, and here's why she's going to lose, no matter what she does, whether Dope for Hope or not. Brian Kemp, his approval rating with Georgians in that poll is 50. His disapproval is 35. She's upside down. 46% disapprove, 43% approve. That goes to the point that I was making. It hurt her back home. She got to be a superstar everywhere else, and the star's luster faded here to some degree. And that fave and fave is why she is going to lose. And I don't know that at this juncture that it's going to make a big difference. Here's her ray of sunshine, okay? Just to be fair. All of these polls that have Brian winning by 5 points to 10 points have her getting a unrealistically low share of the black vote. Some of that is going to fall her away. And some of that's going to stay home because they're not enthused about her, they don't like her. But some of that's going to go her. So there's going to be some tightening, but that's her major problem.
Yeah, I'll try to be quick real quick. I think Brian knows probably what I'm going to say. First, I'm not in the business of success shaming people, right? This whole narrative that Republicans are putting out that she got too big and she made too much money and she became too international. I personally have a problem with that because I think that if you know Stacey Abrams, you know her story and where she came from, you know that, look, she didn't start off like, third base like some people in this country, right? She started off at home plate and she made a way. And so, secondly, I think to answer your question, she needs more people like you to say exactly what you just said and not be afraid to, bring a level of humanization to her campaign. Because the challenge is that, look, she's trying to have a policy debate. She's also talking about the economy. She's talking about Medicaid expansion. She's talking about sports betting. She's talking about healthcare, hospital closures. She's talking about a lot of different things. And I'm sure they're throwing all this data at her, right? But I think the thing that you are going to see is to have more authentic validators like you talk about Stacey being this moderate as a minority leader who worked with Republicans to get things done.
Look, including my boss, Nathan Deal.
Yeah, they
very close.
If you talk to Republicans that serve with her, know her, they're all either scared of her or they actually think she's the smartest person they've ever met, right? Mm. But the fact is are they going to vote for her? And then the last thing I think that she will continue to do is, look, she has the money. She has time, not much time, 49 days, but she's got to close strong. She's got to basically convince voters that you're not getting this and that with Brian Kemp, and that on day one, I will give you this and that, which is totally contrast to what this is. And she's got to make a very good case of why you should not reelect an incumbent.
Hi, my name's Rhea. I'm also with the Social Action Alliance at GSU. I was just wondering if you think the polls have taken into account the recent voting laws that have been changed in the session, and also how you think those will affect the outcome of the election.
Oh, we know empirically that it will affect them zero, because there was all this talk about, nobody's going to be able to vote now. And then we had municipal elections last year, and there was absolutely zero problem of eligible voters being able to cast a ballot. So none of that stuff has proven out. And that's something that has hurt Stacey Abrams' brand. Going back to what this guy was saying, she was a moderate in the state house, and that is no longer her brand. Like, her brand does not match what her record was. Mm. And if she was still branded as a moderate, she would be able to contrast Brian Kemp on the abortion law. But Georgia voters see her as radical, too. Mm. You know, if you think Brian Kemp is, they think she is, too. And she made great inroads in 2018 with particularly white women in the northern suburbs, and I would say maybe some white men in the northern suburbs. A lot of them are going to vote for Brian Kemp this time because they're happy he kept the economy open. But the thing about the SB 202, the election law, it will not hurt anybody's access to the ballot box, period. I promise on my daughter's speech school tuition.
So, real quick, I think that it will have an effect, and I don't know if the polls is really reflecting that. But look, the truth of the matter is, Democrats, we beat the Republicans at their own game. They created these laws, absentee ballot, early voting, vote by mail. These are all laws that they put in place, right? And so it just took Democrats a little longer, really not until 2016, to figure out, like, okay, wow, we can really work at this. And then 2018, we got that close. I mean, it was less than 55,000 votes that Stacey lost by. But boom, in 2020, when we actually beat the Republicans by the rules that they created, they go and introduce Senate Bill 202. Now, I'm not going to call it Jim Crow 2.0. I don't think it's that. But I do think it's restrictive. And I think it was basically put in place to try to change some laws that will favor outcomes for Republicans. I mean, just look at the law. Basically, if one citizen has a concern about the election, for whatever reason, then there's a group of Republicans, particularly led by Republican legislature, will be able to determine what happens in that county. And then last thing, when Brian says that there was, you know, 2020 was perfect and all that, I mean, he's seen it on the news. Look at what's going on in Coffee County. Mm-hmm. I mean, the woman actually was leading a parade of IT experts to go in to try to change the machine. And look, you know, there were some other counties that it didn't go well. So I'm torn. Do I make it a bigger issue, and will it suppress people from going out because, man, you're telling them all that's wrong with voting? Or do you leave it alone and say, look, guys, the best answer for this law is just go out, make sure you're registered, and just go out and vote early in person if you can. If you're disabled or you can't do it in person, have someone maybe drive you or do your absentee ballot, right? And I think that's the message that Democrats got to put out.
The Jim Crow rhetoric really hurt Democrats.
All right, our last question for the evening.
Awesome. My name is Jordan Madden. I am also a student with the Social Action Alliance and the 93rd speaker here in student government. My question is, Stacey Abrams is employing a number of different tactics that is hooking on to key down ballot races. How do you think the down ballot race's baggage may affect the governor's race and vice versa?
I'll take that first one. Look, I am that one gets me a little fired up because a lot of these people who are actually running for these constitutional offices down ballot are personal friends of mine. Two of them in particular, Charlie Bailey and Alicia Thomas Searcy, we go back 20 years when we started as young Democrats. I was a young Democrat at Clark Atlanta University and actually had a Young Democrats of Georgia debate in this very room. I think that, look, a lot of these down ballot candidates on both sides are very talented, right? In particular, the Democratic side, I don't think that somebody like a William Bowdoin, who's running for labor commissioner, B. Wynn, Nikita Hemingway, Janice Laws, Ross Robinson.
No relation.
Jen Jordan. I mean, these are, like, if you put the Republican candidates, which are, correct me if I'm wrong, because Fitz is not on the ballot. Oh, no, you got Herschel, sorry. All but one of them will be all white men, correct?
John King.
And John King is Hispanic. That's right. So y'all are doing better with diversity. killing it. They have a black man and a Latino man who, by the way, Commissioner King is very revered. It's the future of the Republican Party. But when you look at the Democratic ticket down ballot, it looks like Jordan. So to answer your question, I don't think that there's any baggage down ballot for Democrats. I think they're all waiting for airtime and get some space. But I think that there is a coordinated effort to make sure they have the resources they need to be competitive.
Let me tell you this. To show up here at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday night, you guys are more politically attuned to what's happening in the state than 90% of your fellow Georgia voters. And I would imagine most of you could not name the down ballot candidates in some of these races. I can't even name some of those names that Theron just said on the Democrat side, even though one of them is a Robinson. And, you know, so much of what happens down ballot is going to be tied directly to the Abrams-Kemp race. I do not believe there are Kemp Jordan voters, Kemp Bailey voters. I don't believe that. And if they do, it's going to be a minuscule percentage. Now, the tricky one is the top of the ticket. Now, we know in the data, we've seen consistently that there is a Kemp Warnock voter. It could be up to 9%. That is a huge, huge factor there. So we'll see how that plays out. Can Herschel bring home the people who are voting for Kemp? And if not, Warnock's got a really strong path to victory. That's going to be the trick. Can he get all of Kemp's voters? One of the most fascinating things about the 2021 runoff, and I want to put all of these people in a focus group, are those people who went in and said, John Ossoff, Raphael Warnock, Bubba.
right? I mean, because so, a lot of people did it. I mean, Bubba won as a Republican on the same ballot with them. And so you have people going and going, we'll talk about diversity of the changing state. People go, I want a black guy, a Jewish guy, and Bubba. I'm going to cover all my bases right here on this one ballot. But it goes to show you, now it's not a huge percentage of the population, but it was a decisive percentage of the population. And who are those people? What pushes their buttons? He mentioned Alicia, who was a black Democrat running for school superintendent. She is someone who has been really good on school choice through the years as a legislator, something that doesn't always sit well with her base, but that might attract some people who are open to being a swing voter. A school choice is something that's very important to me. I will take that into consideration when I go to vote. Can she tell people that? Can she tell Republicans that she's open to their ideas on school choice without hurting her own coalition? That's an interesting dynamic. But the bottom line is, if Brian Kemp wins, Burt Jones wins, Chris Carr wins, Bruce Thompson wins, Juan Reyes, which is John King's real name, wins. So they're closely tied. And then the Warnock-Walker race is the wild card. And while I saw last week that when it comes to like, and Theron's mentioned this stat, we have $300 million booked on TV through the summer and fall. $300 million. $200 million of that, and there will be more, is just for the Senate race. So we're going to get pounded on that. They are fighting for every vote because that is the one that is up in the air right now.
Y'all know how I end the podcast, right? Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, public affairs, and government consultant, and most recently a senior advisor to the Biden Georgia campaign. Lily Oppenheimer Stan is our new producer for Political Breakfast. We are so honored to have been in your house tonight. We are so honored to be here and talk politics, and we'll see how it all turns out in 49 days. Thank you for joining us for Political Breakfast Live.
Thank you. Thank you.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.